We're holding on Tess Amud Aleph, the sixth line of the wide lines. We started talking yesterday about the Chanukah Sabayis of the first Beis Hamikdash, where they had 7 days of celebration for the Chanukah Sabayis, and then another 7 days of Sukkot back-to-back with that. And we said that that's where we learned that Ein Ma'arvin Simcha B'Simcha, because otherwise Shlomo could have delayed the Chanukah Sabayis until Sukkot itself, which would have had the advantage. Tosfos says this way people don't have to take as much time off work. And Marsha, actually, I didn't mention this yesterday, but Marsha points out also, we're going to say in the Gemara today, that they ended up eating on Yom Kippur that year. So like this, if they hadn't had the Chanukah Sabayis, then they would have had a regular Yom Kippur. But the fact that they didn't do that means that Ein Ma'arvin Simcha B'Simcha, and ultimately we learn it from the way that the Pasuk phrases it, that it had to dafka be that way, and there was no option of making the celebration on the same days, on the 7 days of Sukkot itself. So now we're going to talk about various details of what happened that year. So Amar Rav Parnach, Amar Rav Yechanan, Oysa Shana Lo Osi Yisrael Asi Yom HaKippurim. That year, the Jewish people did not keep Yom Kippur in the normal way. They ate and drank every day of the 7 days of the Miluim. So the 7 days, the last 7 days before Sukkot, which means that Yom Kippur was one of them. So the people were worried and they were saying, what if now, because we didn't keep Yom Kippur, the enemies of the Jewish people, meaning really the Jewish people themselves, deserve to be destroyed? Maybe we did wrong by ignoring Yom Kippur and celebrating like all the other days. But Amr Elohim, a Basko, came out and said, don't worry, just the opposite. Kulchem mizumanin l'chaya olam haba. All of you are ready for the life of olam haba. Now, ko Yisrael yashen l'chaya olam haba, but the idea of mizumanin l'chaya olam haba means you won't even need, sometimes a person needs Yisurim or Gehenim or what have you in order to be able to get into olam haba. The Basko is telling them, you don't have to worry about that. You're all just the opposite. You're on a very high level. And you'll go straight to Olam Haba when the time comes. Marsha says, why kulchem? Because you're going to have some people who ate because l'shem shemayim, because it's during the Chanukah Sabayis. Then you're going to have naturally, by the nature of things, there's going to be some people who will have eaten not because of that, but just because look, you know, good. We have a break. We don't have to fast. Therefore, we might as well take advantage of it. So they're eating as achila gasa. They're like just eating in order to fill up their stomachs. Nevertheless, they're being told that they also are mizmonim l'chaya olam haba. Okay, the Gemara says, my Jewish, what exactly, to begin with, what did the Chachamim of that time darshan to figure out that the Jewish people should break Yom Kippur that year? So Omru kavachomer. So they figured out kavachomer as follows. Umam mishkan she'en kedushas kedushas olam, madach the mishkan, which does not have a kedusha for all time, the korban yochid, doicha Shabbos. And we have, so what happened? During the Chanukah, some mishkan, the Nesiim brought korbanos every day. These are the Nesiim that we read about on Hanukkah and during the first days of Nisan. And included was one of them brought his korbanos on Shabbos, even though it's a korban yochid. That one was the Nasi of Bnei Ephraim. The Gemara is going to point out soon, how do we know that? How do we know that they actually brought them on 12 consecutive days? Maybe, in fact, they skipped Shabbos. We'll get back to that point. Right now, we're saying, as we're going to learn soon in the Gemara, that, in fact, they did, and therefore that means out of 12 of them, necessarily one of them brought his korban on Shabbos. So it was for the Mishkan, which doesn't have a kedusha for all time, and it was and there was a korban yochid doicha Shabbos. So the korban yochid overrode Shabbos, the issu skila, where after all Shabbos involves an issu skila, which is much more serious. And nevertheless, a yochid, the nasi of one of the shvatim, brought a korban on that day. So they figured mikdash dikdushase kedushas olam. Well, then the Beis Mikdash has kedusha for all time, in the sense, now Rashi and Tosfos don't discuss over here in what sense does it have kedusha for all time, given that eventually the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, but Rashi and Tosfos discuss it in a different context in the Gemara and Shavuos, which Gilyon HaShas references over here, and there are various possibilities that are brought up. One of them is that after the Beis Mikdash was destroyed, you were never allowed, while the Beis Mikdash was standing, and even after it was destroyed, you're never allowed to bring korbanos on bamos, on private bamos, anywhere else. Unlike after the Mishkan, where they had the period when after that, when the Mishkan was in Gilgal, and later on when it was in Noiv and Givon, where you were allowed to. That's the point that Rashi brings up over there. Tosfos says that the point of Kedushas Olam is, among other things, that you can never build the Beis Mikdash anywhere else. Up until that point, the Beis Mikdash was in various places, in the Midbar, wherever they traveled, and then in Gilgal, and then in the Shiloh, and so forth. But once it was brought to Yerushalayim, then you're never allowed to build it anywhere else. Also, Tosfos says over there, the fact is, it was Olam in the sense it lasted much longer than the Mishkan. The Mishkan in the desert was only 40 years. The first Beis Mikdash was 410 years. Anyway, so they figured that therefore the Beis Mikdash has Dushas Olam, the Korban Tzibur. Here we're not just talking about bringing Korbanos Yochid. Here we're bringing Korbanos Tzibur at the Milurim, the Yom Kippurim, the Onush Kores, and we're not dealing here with Shabbos. We're dealing only with Yom Kippur, where the maximum penalty for violating Yom Kippur is Kores. Loi Koshikin. Then they figured, how much more so that we should be doing the Chanukah, we should be celebrating the Chanukah Sabayis on Yom Kippur, just like all the other days. So Ela Amai Ho Yudoyim. So okay, in that case, what are they worried about? Why are they worried that what if Nischaibu Senein Sho Yisrael Kloya? After all, what they came up with was a valid Kavachomer. What's the problem? And the answer is Hosam Tzorach Gavoya Hochat Tzorach Hedya. The difference is that by the Mishkan, what were they overriding Shabbos with is korbanos that are brought to Hashem. The Nasi of the Shevet that brought that day, it was Shevet Ephraim, brought korbanos which are offered to Hashem. The Rosh points out among them were Chatas, and among them were Siris and Echad Chatas, and then Lezevach HaShlomim Bokar Shnayim. So ultimately they had to eat those, but okay, we can answer very simply that they only cooked and ate those on Matzoi Shabbos. The actual korbanos themselves were brought on Shabbos, but not necessarily was the preparing of the parts that they ate, that the Kohenim and that the people ate, not necessarily was that done on Shabbos. Whereas Hochat Sodach Hedyet, here we're talking about that not just that they brought korbanos, but that people were eating and drinking and being v'simcha. So they realized, you know what, after all, very nice, the kavachomer that we made, but after all, should we have taken it as far as that the commoners, as that the regular people, as that people are eating, and not just that we're bringing korbanos on the mizbeach? So Gemara says, well, why taka did they do that? Why indeed did they do that? They should have continued bringing korbanos and having the simcha on Yom Kippur. Just don't eat and drink. What does one have to do with the other? And the answer is no. Ein simcha v'lo yachilo shtia. Because there's no real simcha without eating and drinking. And since they have to have the simcha of the Chanukah Sabayis going on as they learn the Kal v'Chomer, then necessarily that meant that they have to eat and drink as well. So that's why. So again, so they were worried that maybe after all, maybe they had misapplied the Kal v'Chomer, and therefore they had the Baskol reassuring them. So the Gemara says, "Umishkan didochi Shabbos menolon." Where indeed do we know that the korbanos by the Mishkan did override Shabbos? Now again, we're not talking about the korbanos amiluim, where the Torah tells us to bring certain korbanos every day. Fine, that's the same Hashem who gave the Torah and said to keep Shabbos is the same one who said to bring those korbanos. That's not the problem. We're talking about the korbanos of the Nesiim, where the Nesiim brought them on their own initiative. So fine, Hashem said, nasi echad layoim, that every day one of the Nesiim should be bringing, but how do we know that one of them, in fact, brought on Shabbos? There is, by the way, there's a sikha in Chelek Chav Gimel for Nasai, where the Rebbe talks about, there's a couple of different statements in Medrash Rabbah, over there, one of which seems to imply that they had permission min Hashemayim to do that, and another one that seems to imply that not, but Hashem accepted it anyway. And the Rebbe analyzes at some length over there what the different possibilities are about Shabbos being dechuya versus chutra, etc. Anyway, so how do we know that one of the Nesiim in fact brought his korbanos on Shabbos? By the way, so that Nasi was Shevet Ephraim, that Medrash mentions over there, why was Shevet Ephraim particularly Zoycha to that? So it says, because Yosef kept Yosef, we know, honored Shabbos, as we find the Medrash says that when you have, when the second time that his brothers came to Mitzrayim, and he tells the person in charge of his house, invite them in, tvoyach tevach b'hochen, and shech an animal, and prepare it, they're going to be eating together with me. This is, he's preparing a Shabbos sugar. So we see that Yosef specially honored Shabbos, so therefore we have this chus that one of his descendants, the Nasi of Shevet Ephraim, is able to bring his korbanos on Shabbos. But anyway, the Ta'or Gemara is saying, how do we know that? You're going to say, because it starts by saying that the first Nasi brought on the first day, and the seven, and then you have eventually the seventh one brought on the seventh day. So the Pashtos, we would assume, Vayim HaRishon means Sunday, and Vayim HaShvi means Shabbos. And in fact, there is. The Gemara in Shabbos tells us that Rosh Chodesh Nissan that year, the day that Nachshon Ben Aminadab brought his Korbanos, was in fact a Sunday, which therefore would mean that Yom HaShvi would be Shabbos. But still, how do we know that? Duma Shvi the Korbanos. Maybe the word Shvi doesn't mean it was the seventh day of the week. Maybe it means it's the seventh day of bringing the Korbanos. So, fine, let's say that Rosh Chodesh Nissan was on Shabbos. Maybe what happened was the first 6 days of Nissan, Sunday through Friday, six Nasiim brought their Korbanos. Then they stopped for Shabbos. And then on Sunday, the next Nasi, Shevet Ephraim, brought his Korban. So it means, in other words, it's the seventh day of the Korbanos, but it's the eighth day since they began because they skipped Shabbos. How do you know that not? Amar of Nachav Yitzchok, Amar Krabi Yoyim Ashtei Oso Yoyim. Because later on and goes through the Nasiim, it says on the 11th day, the Nasi of Shevet Osho brought his Korbanos. Now, why the word Yoyim twice? Just be Yoyim Ashtei Oso, like all the other ones, Bayim Arishan, Bayim Arishan, Bayim Asheni, Bayim Ashlishi, etc. So why be Yoyim Ashtei Oso Yoyim? It means to teach us, my Yoyim Kulei Rotsu, just like a day goes continuously, there's no time when we say it doesn't belong to a day. Af Ashtei Oso, Kulei Rotsufin, we're meant to learn from that, that the 11 days until that point had all been consecutive. And again, if they're consecutive, means that one of them was Shabbos, and so we see they brought the Korban on Shabbos. The Gemara says, still, the Duma Yomim HaRu'uyin, still, maybe it means of the days that they could bring Korbanos are consecutive. So in other words, again, maybe what it means is that they skipped Shabbos, but that's not considered to make it non-consecutive. Of the weekdays that had been up until that point, you shouldn't think, for example, let's say the Nasi of Yehuda brought his Korban on the first day, and then nobody brought on the second day, and then they went back to bringing on the third day, etc. No, all the weekdays, they had Korbanos of the Nasiim. But still, how do we know that one of that on Shabbos as well? So the answer is Ksiv Kroachrina. Sure, but you have another pasuk that says there's another pasuk that says V'yom Shneim Also Yom on the 12th day. And anyway, Rashi points out the question was about Yomim HaRu'uyim. If we were to say Yomim HaRu'uyim, then it would mean the same thing applies to the Chanukah Sabayis. We would say the Yomim HaRu'uyim, the days on which it's suitable to be eating and drinking, namely all the days except Yom Kippur, they'd be doing that, but maybe they have to skip Yom Kippur. So the answer is no. Ksiv Krachrina, you have another pasuk by the Nasiim. The Yom Shneim also Yom. On the 12th day, then the Nasi of Shevet Naphtali brought his Korban. So again, the extra yom teaches us my yom kulei rotsuf, that just like the day is completely consecutive, there's no break in it, afshneim also yom kulei rotsufin, the same way thing, the 12 days up until that point had all been consecutive. So the Gemara says, still, why is that a stronger proof than the other? The duma hochanami yomim eroyin, still, maybe it means only the days that are suitable. Again, maybe it means of the days until that point. It means there had altogether been, since the Nasiim started bringing, there were actually 13 days, but one of them was Shabbos, and they skipped that. So now we mean the 12th of the weekdays is the day when Shevet Naphtali brought. If that were the case, then we wouldn't need two psukim that have the extra word yoyim. Good morning, Yaakov. Once we have two psukim like that, that have the extra word yoyim, then we're able to say, it's not just that it means that the weekdays that when they could bring Korbanos were consecutive, it means that all the days were consecutive, including Shabbos. So it means, therefore, that there actually were 12 consecutive days on which the Nasiim brought Korbanos, and necessarily one of them had to be Shabbos. So now they could learn from that by a Kavachomer that the same thing applies to the Chanukah Sabayis, that they should continue it like normal, even though one of the days was Yom Kippur. So the Gemara says, after all, Okay, so one more thing we have to ask. Okay, but still, how do we know, in fact? Okay, so now we're saying that by the Beis Hamikdash, they could have overridden Yom Kippur because they could use this Kal Vachomer. How do we know they actually did? Maybe when the Pasuk says they had 7 days of celebration, like this, we figure that it means that they began on Ches Tishrei and went up to and including your Dalet Tishrei, and then went straight into Sukkot. Maybe not. Maybe they started on Zion Tishrei. They had 3 days of celebration, Zion, Ches, and Tes. Then they broke for Yom Kippur and fasted on Yom Kippur like normal. And then they continued for another 4 days between Yom Kippur and Sukkot. How do we know that not? So, Umikdash Dodecha Yom Kippur and Menalon. How indeed do we know that by the Chanukah Sabayis, they did override Yom Kippur? You're going to say, because it says they celebrated 14 days, and the Pashtus, that means 14 days straight from Ches Tishrei until the end of Sukkot. So again, the question is, maybe it means only the days that are suitable. Maybe it means they began one day earlier and skipped Yom Kippur. And the answer is no. Gama, yoim, yoim, mehasam. We learn Gzeira Shava on the word yoim from the Nesiim. Just like we just established by the Nesiim that the fact that it says, b'yoim ashtei also yoim, and b'yoim shneim also yoim, means that the 11 and the 12 days were consecutive. The same way over here, when it says arba also yoim, means that the 14 days were consecutive, and that means that it did include Yom Kippur, and they did have the simcha and the eating and drinking of the Chanukah Sabayis on Yom Kippur that year, like every other day. So not like a normal Yom Kippur. Okay. So we said, Yotza Baskov Amar Lahem, we said that after that, they were worried, did we apply the Kal Vachomer correctly? Because after all, we said there is a flaw in that Kal Vachomer by the Mishkan. It was Tzorech Gavoya. Here it's Tzorech Hedyot, that regular people are eating and drinking. And we said, Yotza Basko V'Amr Lahem. We said a Basko came out and announced to them, Kocham Mizumonin L'chaya Olam Haba. All of you are ready and prepared for the life of Olam Haba. So the question is, where exactly do we get that from? That we're saying there was a baskel, but where do we have something in the pasuk that indicates that Hashem in fact forgave them for breaking Yom Kippur that year? So the answer is the Tani Tachlifa. The answer is based on what Tachlifa taught a Braisa. Tachlifa, I guess, was one of the Amiroyim. He taught a Braisa that says as follows. The pasuk says at the end of the Chanukah Sabayis, appropriately enough, we read this as the last pasuk of the Haftorah on Shmini Atzeres. Vayoyim Hashmini Shilach Hasa'om, on the eighth day, on Shmini Atzeres, Shlomo sent the people away, meaning that he gave them permission to go. Vayivorchu Hasa'om. Now, Marsha points out, by the way, that it's not like they could travel that far on Shmini Atzeres anyway. Shmini Atzeres is Yom Tov, but it means, in other words, that they might have been planning to go, and they'll stay within the Tchum of Yerushalayim. At least they'll get a head start on their trip home. We'll see soon in the Gemara what actually ended up happening. Anyway, so Bayim Hashmini Shilach Hasa'om, on the eighth day, he dismissed the people and gave them permission to go, by Yivorcho as a melech, and they blessed the king, by Yilchu la'oleim, and they went to their tents, smeichim v'tovei lev, they were happy and with good hearts, al kol ha'tova asha osa Hashem l'dovet abdoi, or the Yisrael amai, because they were happy and of good hearts, because of all the goodness that Hashem had done for his servant David, and for his people Yisrael. So now the Gemara is going to explain that last half of the pasuk, phrase by phrase. What's la'oleim, what's smeichim and v'tovei lev, and what was the special good that Hashem did for David? So when it says la'olehem, when it says they went to their tents. Now, as we had the other day, for example, we talked about a mitzvah where there's a period of time when he's not allowed to have relations with his wife, and the pasuk phrases that as v'yashav michutz la'olay shivas yamim, that he has to stay out of his oyel. So we see that sometimes an oyel is a metaphor for a person's wife. So therefore, it means shahochu matzu nesheim betara. So when it says they went la'olehem, means they came and they found that their wives are tahor. And since there's a point, the Gemara mentions elsewhere that a husband and wife should really have relations when a husband has been away on a trip and then comes back home. So now they're immediately able to take advantage of that. They don't have to have that to their wives are nida and they have to wait. So that's la'olehem. When we say smeichim, what were they happy? Shenenu mizivah shchina. They were able to. They're during the time when they were by the Chanukah Sabayis. They enjoyed the radiance of the shchina. When it says v'tovei lev, when it says that they had good hearts, meaning what happened was shekol echad v'echad nistaber ishtei b'ben zachar. After that, after they came back home and had relations with their wives, all of their wives had baby boys after that. Which is now why we call that tove lev. So Marsha points to Gemaras in other places where we find that sometimes when a person had a daughter, he was troubled by it. In fact, there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin. We just had it recently in the Ein Yaakov Shir, where sometimes a person has a daughter and it can be a source of worry to him. What's going to happen with her throughout her life? There's sometimes more to worry about than there is with a boy. So therefore, so tove lev refers to when you don't have any such worries and you have a boy. So all of them had that. The pasuk continues, al kol ha-tova. They were happy about all the goodness. What goodness? We said, sheyatza basko v'amar lahem, kochem ezamonim l'chaya olam haba. That the basko came and said, all of you are ready for chaya olam haba. That's tremendous goodness. That's the ultimate goodness. So therefore, that's one of the things they were happy about. Now, what do we mean with David Abdo Yisrael Amo? The pasuk says that they were happy about the good that Hashem had done for his servant David and for his nation Yisrael. So, Bishlema Yisrael Amo, I understand what the happiness was about for the Jewish nation, the Achalahu Avon Yom Kippurim, because we're saying that Hashem forgave them for eating on that Yom Kippur. Elo David Abdo Mayhi, what was the special good that they were happy about that Hashem had done for David? David had passed away years before this. They only started building the Beis Hamikdash in the fourth year of Shlomo's reign, and it took 7 years to build it. So now it's and they only finished it in Cheshvan of Shlomo's 11th year, and the Chanukah Zabayis was the following Tishrei. So it's at least 12 years since David passed away. What was the special thing for David? So Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav. What happened was, when Shlomo wanted to bring the Aron into the Beis Mikdash, so for years before that, the Aron had been in a temporary tent in Yerushalayim, ever since David had brought it there about 40 years earlier. So when Shlomo wanted to bring the Aron into the Beis Mikdash, Dov Kusharim Zelozeh, the gates stuck together, and they wouldn't open, they wouldn't open to admit the Aron. Now, why not? Well, one reason is, in fact, in order to trigger this whole thing that's going to happen, that eventually Shlomo is going to ask Hashem to open it in the S'chus of David. The Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us what happened was, and also in Shabbos, tells us what happened was, David had asked Hashem to forgive him for the whole story with Bathsheba, and Hashem said, I'm willing to forgive you. So David said, Can you make a public demonstration of that? You have all my enemies are thinking that I'm a horrible guy. I was mizana with an Eishes Ish, etc. Can you make a public demonstration to show that they're wrong? So Hashem said, I'm not going to do it while you're alive, but I will do it after you pass away in your son Shlomo's times. So that's one reason over here. Hashem wanted to orchestrate things that they should have to daven, that they should be open in the S'chus of David, and then they'll open, and that will show everybody that they were wrong and kol ha'omer David chata in elatoya. So that's one reason why they stuck together. Anyway, Amar Shlomo Esrim ba'arba Renanos v'leinen. Shlomo said 24 expressions of plea of calling out, of crying out to Hashem, and still he wasn't answered. What are these 24? Rashi explains. Now you have in Malachim there, you have a long tefillah that Shlomo said by the Chanukah Sabayis, and in that tefillah he has 24 different times when he mentions the concept of davening to Hashem. He uses different synonyms for it: rina and tchina and tefillah and bakasha. So if you count up how many different expressions of that he used, you come up with 24. So that's one thing that it means, the Arbor Anonis. Different explanation is that that the psukim that we're going to say over here that he said su'usharim rashaychem or in kapitol chavdalad of tilim. So Marsha in Sanhedrin seems to say this that he said the first 24 kapitlach of tilim. Anyway, and still v'loy nan. So v'loy nan is still not being answered. The gates are still not opening. Pasach v'omar. So Shlomo started saying su'usharim rashaychem. And that's why you have the psukim where we say, gates, lift up your heads, the Yahweh Melech HaKavod, and a Miza Melech HaKavod, Hashem Tzvakas U Melech HaKavod Selah. So he said all that, but like then, and still he's not being answered, and the gates are not opening up in honor of the Aron. finally, Kivin Sha'omar, finally, in Divrei Yomim, when it tells over about the tefillah that he said, Hashem Elokim al toshev pnei mishichecha. Hashem, please don't return empty-handed the face of your Mashiach, of your anointed one. Zachra l'chaste David avdecha. Remember the kindness and the tzidkos of your servant David. Then miyad nana. Right away, then he was answered, and the gates opened up, and they were able to bring in. Then they were able to bring in the aron. So ba'osa shah nefchu pnei sone David kishulek deira. At that moment, the faces of David's enemies turned black. So it can mean the enemies of his who were still alive, where now they're completely embarrassed, where now they finally realize how all these years they've been misjudging David, and so now their faces turn black in embarrassment. It can also refer to David's enemies who already were in the Olam HaEmes, where now, in other words, now they got like a taste of Gehenim for a moment over there, realizing how badly they had misjudged David all those years. Anyway, the Yodra Kol Shemachal Hakadosh Baruch Hu Al Oisa Oven. Now everybody knew that Hashem had forgiven him for the Aveira with Bathsheba, and therefore that Hashem had opened the gates of the Beis Hamikdash only in his schus. So now, when they went home after the Chanukah Zabayis, this is when we say that they were happy about the good that Hashem had done for David. That was what it was. That now, finally, 12 years or more after David had passed away, he's finally vindicated that Hashem had forgiven him. So now the Gemara is going to tell a story which is going to relate back to a point that we just said. We said that we quoted the pasuk that on the eighth day, on Shmini Atzeres, Shlomo had given the people permission to leave. So now we're going to talk about it. Now we're going to have a story that relates to that, that relates to how we understand that pasuk. The Gemara says, Rabbi Yonasan ben Asmai, Rabbi Yehuda ben Gerim, Tonu Parshas Nedorim, Bei Rabbi Shimon Yechoi. Rabbi Yonasan ben Asmai and Rabbi Yehuda ben Gerim had been studying the Parsha of Nedarim in the yeshiva of Rav Shimon Ben Yochai. Parsha's Nedarim, Rashi over here says it means Masechta Nedarim. Rashi Ksavyad says it could mean that, or it could mean the actual Parsha of Nedarim in the Torah, the beginning of Parsha's Matthas. And by the way, there's some discussion on the question. Tosfos brings up the question in Shabbos: is this Rav Yehuda Ben Gerim the same one who we have the story in Shabbos over there where Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi are sitting together and discussing the pros and cons of what the Romans are doing in Eretz Yisrael, and Rabbi Shimon expressed himself in a derogatory way about the Romans, and therefore he had to run away, and eventually then Yehuda ben Gerim mastered on him, and he wound up having to run away, and that's why he hid in the cave for all the years. And at the end of there, Rabbi Shimon meets up with Yehuda ben Gerim and turns him into a pile of bones. Tosfos discusses that in the light of all Gemara over here, where he was actually a Talmud of Yehuda ben Gerim, and he was a Talmud of Rav Shimon ben Yochai, and Rav Shimon ben Yochai says on him in the Gemara, we're going to have in a minute, that he says on him that he and Rav Yonasan are Anoshim Shal Tzura, the prominent people. So Tosfos says over there that maybe in fact, there are Meforshim we'll talk about that maybe they are in fact two different people. Tosfos says over there, based on our Gemara, it seems that he was in fact a Talmid Chacham, and therefore at the end over there, it shouldn't be that it says in the Gemara that Rabbi Shimon made him Gal Shalat Samos, which is what would happen to a Rasha, but rather that he looked at him and he passed away, like in a Bokavadik way for a Talmid Chacham. There are actually Meforshim who explain that over there, it's not, he didn't deliberately set out to go and master on Rabbi Shimon. He told over the conversation. It's sichas cholin shel Talmid Chachamim, tzricha Talmud after all. So he told it over to somebody who then inadvertently told it to somebody else, and eventually word of it reached the Romans. So according to that, in other words, not that he deliberately set out to master on Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, but still Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai held it against him that he had revealed something that should have stayed secret and that put Rabbi Shimon's life in great danger. Anyway. So the Gemara continues over here. Iftu minei b'urta. One evening, they took leave of him. They're getting ready to go. L'tzafra hodur v'kom iftu minei. Then in the morning, they came back, and again they asked, and again they took leave of him and asked for permission to go. Omelahu, so he says, what do you need? V'lav iftu minei b'urta. Didn't you already say goodbye to me and take your leave yesterday, last night? Omrulei, they told him, l'matonu rabbeinu. Rebbe, you taught us. Talmud shenifta me rabbi, that if a Talmud takes leave of his Rebbe, And if a Talmud takes leave of his Rebbe, the lon ba'oser ir, and then he doesn't end up leaving that night, he ends up staying over that night in the city, then he actually has to take leave of him again another time. And we see that from the story of Shlomo with the Jewish people. Before we quoted the pasuk from Malachim, that says that on the eighth day, on Shmini Atzeres, they took leave of the king. The king gave them permission to go. But then you have another pasuk, Divrei Hayamim, when it tells over the story, it says it says on the 23rd of Tishrei he dismissed the people. Now Shmini Atzeres is the 22nd of Tishrei, not the 23rd. So Ella Mikan the Talmud Hanifta Merabbi. So we see from here that if a Talmud takes leave of his Rebbe, the Lonva Oisair, and then he stays overnight in the city, Sarakli Potter Menapam Acheres, then he needs to take leave of him again. In other words, what happened was the people had intended to leave on the 22nd, which is Shmini Atzeres, which, as we said before, as Marsha points out, they couldn't have actually traveled all the way home because Yom Tov, they can't go outside the Tum. But it means, okay, they were planning to get a head start on their trip and they'd stay within 2,000 Amos of Yerushalayim. But then in the end, they didn't. In the end, they ended up staying in Yerushalayim. So therefore, it's Tzarech Lipotim Menapam Acheres. So now on Isru Chag, on the 23rd, when they're leaving again, then they took leave of Shloimeh again. Marsha also points out it's possible that they didn't realize, really. I mean, they knew, obviously, of the Yom Tov of Shmini Atzeres. They actually may not have realized that they're still supposed to stay in Yerushalayim for it because it's part of the Samach B'Chagecha and part of that we learned in a couple of places in Sukkah and in various other places and in Tainis that Shmini Atzeres is rego b'pnei atzmo, and one of the meanings of that is that you have to have lina, you have to stay over in the business in Yerushalayim, you have to stay over in Yerushalayim the night after it. Maybe in fact Shlomo informed them of that, and that's why they changed their plans and left only the next day. Whatever the case, we see from that, by the same token, so we Rabbi Yonasan ben Asmai and Rabbi Yehuda ben Gerim, were planning to leave last night. In the event we didn't, we're only leaving today. Therefore, we're coming to take our leave from you, our Rebbe, again. So Rabbi Shimon says to his son, Rabbi Lazar, Anosh bnei adam halolu anoshim shal tzurahim, these people who are leaving are great people. Anoshim shal tzura, Rashi over here translates it means chachamim. In Tainus, we have that expression also, and Rashi over there translated it that it meant people who are physically tall and imposing. They have hadras on him. So Marsha explains over there that maybe actually what it is anoshim shal tzura does mean, in other words, some people that people look up to. So it can be they're chachamim in Torah, there can be that they're chachamim in mila d'alma. Whatever in mundane secular matters. Whatever the case, so Rabbi Shimon says to his son Rabbi Lazar, these people are Anoshim Shal Tzura, they're important people. Zilga Behan de Lavarchucha, go to them, let them and have them give you a bracha. Ozel, so Rabbi Lazar went, Ashkechinu de Koromu Kroy Adodi. He found them sitting and learning together, and they were busy talking about the seeming contradiction between two psukim. Steve, one pasuk in Mishlei says, "Palis maga raglecha." Measure out. Palis is Moloshin Pelas is like a balance scale. So measure out and weigh out the way in which your foot is going to go. V'chol derachecha yukoinu, and in that way, all your ways will be straight and upright. Which includes, in other words, when we say weigh, it means, in other words, that you also have to weigh. Sometimes you have different mitzvahs that are claiming your attention. Weigh them and find out which is the bigger mitzvah and do that. And that way you'll be going in the straight way. Uchtiv, but on the other hand, you have another pasuk in Mishlei, Orachayim pentafales. In the way of life, don't start weighing. In other words, any mitzvah that you have a chance to do it, whether it's big or small. Don't say that there's a smaller mitzvah available, but there's also a bigger one, and therefore let me ignore the smaller one in favor of the bigger one. The Shlomo is warning you with Orachayim pentafales. Don't do that. So what is it? Are you supposed to weigh mitzvahs and determine which one is the better one to do right now or not? And they answered, Loikasha, can the mitzvah she'efshala asosai de'achirim? It depends. When the mitzvah can be done by somebody else, so then what you should do is then you follow the first pasuk. You do the bigger mitzvah and leave it to other people to do the smaller mitzvah. Can the mitzvah she'efshala asosai de'achirim? As opposed to when neither mitzvah can be done by other people, then don't start weighing, then just do whichever one you can first. That's how Rashi learns. Marsha points out that we actually have exceptions to that. We have a case, for example, where a person finds a mes mitzvah and he's on his way to bring his korban Pesach. Both of those are not necessarily mitzvahs that can be done by other people, because the mes mitzvah, there's nobody else available to bury him, and the Pesach, nobody else can do it for you. And we say that you actually go and bury the mes mitzvah, and that means that you're missing bringing the korban Pesach. So Marsha says, actually, it may be the other way around. It may be maybe the opposite of the way that Rashi learned it, that we're saying in the case of the mes mitzvah, you go ahead and do it, because there's nobody else. In the case of the mes mitzvah, you go ahead and do it because there's nobody else available, as opposed to in other cases, you should delegate it. In other cases, you should do the bigger mitzvah first. So that was one. Hodo Yosvi become a boyaruhu. Then they were sitting the same two chachamim, and they had a different question again about a seeming contradiction between two psukim in Mishlei. I said what Marsha is saying wrong. Let me open it up over here and see. So what he says is that so let's say, for example, Pesach and Milah are bigger mitzvahs in a way. If a person misses the Korban Pesach, he can be chayav kodesh. But the point is, in other words, that when there's efshal asosa adachirim, for example, a mes mitzvah, it is a great mitzvah. But on the other hand, it's also possible to find somebody else to do it. So then you shouldn't set aside the lesser mitzvah to do it. But when it's efshal lasosa adachirim, when, for example, there's nobody available to bury the mes mitzvah, then orachayim pentafalis, then measure and do the greater mitzvah of. Then do the greater mitzvah, which is burying the mes mitzvah, and relative to that, Pesach and Milah are considered smaller mitzvahs. So that was one. Then Hodur Yosvi v'Kamei Boyelahu. Then these two Chachamim, Rabbi Yonasan and Rabbi Yehuda, are again sitting while they're still there and talking about another seeming contradiction between Pesukim and Mishlei. K'siv Yekorehi Mipninim. One pasuk says that the Torah is more precious than pninim, which are pearls or rubies or whatever. All of your desires are not worth it compared to the Torah. Now, chafatzecha implies your desires, what you want to do, your agenda. So, in other words, it implies that you should set aside whatever agenda and whatever interests of yours in order to learn Torah and to do mitzvah. On the other hand, but the implication is, but in other words, the implication is, if you have chefze shemayim, if you have a mitzvah that needs to be done, then you should set aside Talmud Torah in order to do the mitzvah. On the other hand, you have another pasuk in Mishlei that says all chafotzim, and here it's not chafotzecha, your desires, here it's ko chafotzim, all desires, implying even the ones of Torah, lo yishvuba, are not equal to the Torah. So dafilu chefte shemayim lo yishvuba. So now it sounds like even chefte shemayim don't override Torah. So what is it? Do you override learning Torah in order to do mitzvahs, or do you not? And again, they answered the same kind of thing. It depends. If the mitzvah could be done by somebody else, then leave the mitzvah to be done by somebody else, and you continue learning Torah. As opposed to if the mitzvah can't be done by somebody else, then interrupt your learning in order to do the mitzvah. Which Tosfos points out, it depends what kind of mitzvahs we're talking about. We do have, for example, that said Rashbi was Torosa Yumnosoi, and he would still interrupt in order to do mitzvahs maisius, like to make a sukkah and to make a lulav. On the other hand, though, for example, it says that Shimon ben Yochai and people like him, who are Torosa Yumnosoi, would not interrupt their learning for davening and for Krishma and for davening. Hagiri Nashas, Rabbi Akiva Eger points out that in the Gemara and Shabbos says they would interrupt for Krishma, just not for Tvila. But whatever the case, the point is there were certain mitzvahs that they wouldn't interrupt their learning for. The Alter Rebbe discusses this point in a couple of places in Tanya, that the mitzvahs maisius bring down a tremendous ur into the world, and therefore certain mitzvahs maisius, even Rashbi with his Torah Seim Nosei, with his very high level learning, would interrupt in order to do. But in any case, the point is that when the mitzvah could be done by somebody else, then definitely you don't interrupt, leave somebody else to accomplish the mitzvah. So now when they were finished that discussion, Omrulay my boy Socha, they turned to Rabbi Lazar, the son of Rashbi, and they said, what are you doing here? Amalahu, so he tells them, the Amali Abba, Zilga Bayo Gilabar Chucha. But my father, Rabbi Shimon Yochai, told me to come to you and get a bracha from you. Omrulay, so they told him as follows, Yehei Rabba de Sizra Avalai Sechzad, may it be Hashem's will that you plant and you don't harvest, to Ayo Avalai Sefer, you should bring out, you should bring in, rather, to Ayo means to bring in, Avalai Sefer, and you shouldn't bring out. Now, it sounds like he means, in other words, it sounds like they were saying, the Gemara is going to say, it sounds like these don't sound like positive things. In particular, so planting and not harvesting, I mean, that doesn't sound like a very good thing. You're supposed to enjoy the harvest. And in fact, one of the klolos in the Teuchacha is that you're going to plant and somebody and then the goyim are going to end up stealing away the harvest from you. The bringing in and not taking out, it makes it sound like, Rashi says, it makes it sound like you're going to bring merchandise into your house, but you're not going to be able to bring it out. Nobody's going to want to buy it. And they continued, you should bring out but not in, which makes it sound like you're going to go buy schora someplace else, and then you're not going to be able to bring it back home. So all these things sound, it sounds very odd that they're saying these things. They continue, lechrev beischa, may your house be destroyed, v'leisav ushpizcha, and may your temporary dwelling place be a ushpiza, is like a lodging, may that be settled. May your table be confused and messed up. And may you not see a new year. What's going on? He also, when Rabbi Lazar came back to Rabbi Shimon, he says, not only did they not give me a bracha, they gave me tzar with what they said. Now, Marsha points out, it's not like even Rabbi Lazar knew enough to know that they're not actually cursing him. That, as bad as these things sound, they're not actually meant as curses. So he carefully avoids the word. He doesn't say that they cursed me. He says they gave me tsar in the sense I'm trying to understand what they're talking about and I can't understand it. So Rabbi Shimon asks him, so what exactly did they tell you? So he says, "Hachi v'hachi amrili," and he quotes verbatim what they told him. Amalei, so Rav Shimon tells him, actually, you didn't quite understand. Kulu hanach kulu birchoseninu. All these things they told you are actually brachas. And there's the idea that's brought in a number of places in Chassidus that there are certain brachas that are so high up, they can't come down into this world in a way that's obvious as a bracha. They have to come down into this world in a negative seeming way, and then you uncover the good that's within them. It talks about in many places in Chassidus, for example, how it's that way with the Teuchacha. All the Teuchacha, all the curses that you have in Bechokosai and in Kisava. And in fact, we learned at the end of Megillah that they're so harsh that really, at least in the ones in Bechokosai, you're not even allowed to interrupt in the middle of them. Nevertheless, hidden within them are great brachas. Mausha, by the way, brings another point. He brings a point, although he says he doesn't really like it. Taka, why did they give him the brachas in this way? So he says, because he says, Shamaiti, I heard that the reason is because they wanted this way. If they give him the brachas, then straight out, if they explain what they're talking about, okay, so he gets the brachas one time. Like this, he gets kind of a double dose of it. He gets it from them, and again, in a hidden way, and then he gets it again from Rashbi in a revealed way when Rashbi explains to him what these brachas really are. So that way, like he gets a double dose of it. Although Marsha says he doesn't really like that explanation. Because after all, Marsha says, how would they know that he's not going to understand? What if he does understand right there off the bat? Then they didn't accomplish anything by that. Anyway, so Rav Shimon explains to him, it means like this. When they told you the first thing you should plant and not harvest, means may you bear children and they don't die during your lifetime. So to bear them is like planting them, and then to harvest them would be like when they pass away young. So that shouldn't happen to you. When they tell you to ayovale tapok, you should bring in and not send out. That means to ayo kalsa means you should be able to have that eventually your sons are going to get married and you're going to bring daughters-in-law into your house, because that's the normal thing. The daughter-in-law usually goes to live with her in-laws. the newlywed couple usually lives with the chosin's parents, so you should bring in kalas. And meanwhile, your sons who married them shouldn't die. Where then? If they do, then those daughters-in-law would have to go out. So that shouldn't happen. Once they come in, they shouldn't have to leave. And vice versa, when he says you should send out and not bring back in, means the opposite. Means you should have daughters, and you're going to eventually send them out because they're going to go live where their husbands live. And their husbands shouldn't die, where then if their husbands die, they would have to return to you. So that's the you should send out and not have to bring in. They continued, they said your house should be destroyed, and your lodging place, your temporary lodging, should be settled. That means, after all, you have to remember, this world is only your temporary lodging. A person is only in it for 70, 80 years or 120 years. Whereas the next world, meaning when after 120, a person passed away, that's your more permanent house, because that's where you're going to stay until Tchias HaNesim. Dichtib, as in fact, we have a pasuk that expresses this idea. Kirbam botemei la'olam. Their houses are kirbam forever. The simple meaning of kirbam means within them. Like the pasuk is talking about Rishayim, who don't even pay attention to the fact that eventually they're going to die. They feel like I have my house with me. That's all I need. I'm good. I'm prosperous and whatever. But I'll take read kirbam ela kivram. Don't read kirbam, but rather kivram, their grave. So we can read the pasuk kivram botem ela olam. Their grave is their house forever. No, not forever, but until Mashiach comes, until as long as this world lasts. So therefore, when they're telling you that your house, I'll take your kibram, I'll kibram. So therefore, when they're telling you that your house should be destroyed, means, in other words, that your grave shouldn't be needed for a long time. You should live very long. And then, and leisa v'shpizach means your temporary lodging in this world should continue to be settled and continue to exist for a long time to come. So they're wishing you arichus yam. And the next one, when they said levalba basodach, when they say your table should be confused and messed up, means b'boni u'gnosa, means you should have lots of children, and children tend to make a mess around the table. And when they tell him you shouldn't see it, when they tell you shouldn't see a new year, that means the new year of Shana Rishona. D'lo tamos insach, they're wishing you that your wife should not pass away. And that way you want to marry another wife, and when you marry another wife, then you'd have Shana Rishona all over again. So they're wishing you that shouldn't happen, that you and your wife should live together with Harichos Yamim Rishonim Tovus. So we see that everything they told him really is a bracha, even though it wasn't so obvious at the beginning. Okay, another example. Rav Shimon Chalafta was taking leave of Rav after learning by him. Amalei Avua. So his father says to him, or on the side of it here, it says that he told his son, whatever. Anyway, he tells him, Rav tells his son, Zil Lagabe de Lavarcha, go to him, let him give you a bracha. So Amalei, so Shimon Chalafta gives him a bracha. Yehei Rava, deloit tevayish v'loit tisbayish. You shouldn't humiliate and you shouldn't be humiliated. Also Lagabi Avua, when Rav's son came back to him, Amalei Mai Amalach, he asked him, what bracha did he give you? Amalei Milin Ba'amod Amalei, he just told me stam avot, he didn't give me a bracha. Amalei, and so when he told it over, Rav says, actually, no. As a matter of fact, what he gave you is a tremendous bracha. This is the very same bracha that Hashem gave to the Jewish people and repeated it even. As the pasuk says, Hashem promises there had been a terrible famine there for several years, and then Hashem says you'll eat and you'll be satisfied. And you'll praise the name of Hashem who did wonders with you. And my people will never be embarrassed. In other words, the goyim won't be saying to them, "Oh, look at that! You're Hashem's people, and yet look how badly he's treating you." And the pasuk continues, you will know that I, Hashem, am in the midst of the Jewish people. And the pasuk continues again, my people will never be embarrassed. So we see, in other words, that so this idea of saying you shouldn't be embarrassed and you shouldn't embarrass others. So there is, Rashi explains, there is, in other words, there when he says milin ba'alma, it means there is, after all, a message in it. There is a hurrah in it that if you don't embarrass other people, you yourself won't have to be embarrassed. But nevertheless, we're also saying that it's a double bracha over there. We're saying that since the pasuk repeats this concept of lo yevoshu ami la'olam, so it means, in other words, it represents this idea that Hashem is saying, that Hashem is giving him the same, that Hashem is giving the Jewish people the same hora. If you want to not be embarrassed, don't embarrass others. But we see that Hashem repeated that bracha, and therefore said what he gave you was actually a very great bracha together with a hora. We said in the Mishnah, "Va'oisa isha tachshiteha." We said that a woman is allowed to apply her cosmetics during Chol HaMoed. So, Tana Rabbanan, "Elohein tachshitei nashim." What kind of cosmetics are we talking about? Kecheles. She's allowed to put eyeshadow on her eyes. Rashi describes they would put eyeshadow between their eyes so they would look nicer. Upekeses. She's allowed to pekeses. Now, there's a few different explanations what pekeses means. Rashi says that it means that she parts her hair, that she combs and parts her hair, so it doesn't fall in front of her face, so it goes to the sides. Tosfos, in other places, Rashi himself brings another explanation that perkeses means that she applies a kind of treatment to her face that causes the skin to be reddish, which, like, that way it gives her face a healthy glow. Tosfos mentions a similar concept over here, that she takes like strings or pieces of dough and puts them on her face, where the idea is that they stay on the face for a little while, and then you take them off, and the skin turns reddish, and that way, like, she has a healthy pink looking skin. There's an explanation from one of the Rishonim, I think from Shlomo ben Hayosim, who says that what they would do is they'd apply like oil or something to the hair in order to keep it in place. He says that's pekesis. Whatever the case, you're allowed to do that during Chol HaMoed. Umavira srak al paneha. She's also allowed to put srak, which is makeup, on her face. Again, Rashi says this is a kind of makeup, like rouge, to make her cheeks red. So you're allowed to do that on Chol HaMoed. The ikar d'amri ma'avera srak al paneha shel mata. There's another opinion that says that she's also allowed to ma'avera srak al paneha shel mata, or Hagoyis Agro changes the word srak to sakin. Actually, Rashi has it that way as well. That she's allowed to use a knife to trim the hair lower down on her body, the hair around her erva. She's allowed to do that on Chol HaMoed as well. So the Gemara tells, "Dveisu d'Rav Chista mekashta ba'anpei kalsa." Rav Chista's wife used to put on her makeup in the presence of her daughter-in-law. So it means, you know, the fact that she had a daughter-in-law meant that she's so old that she already has married children. Why Taka was she doing it in the presence of her daughter-in-law? Sort of Shlomo ben Hayosim says because she wanted to give her tips on how to apply makeup. So like this, you know, watch what I'm doing and follow what I'm doing. Anyway, Yosef Rav Huna bar Chinina kamed Rav Chista. Rav Huna bar Chinina was sitting at the Talmud in front of Rav Chista. The Yosef Bekamar, he was sitting and saying that this that was saying you're allowed to apply makeup during Chol HaMoed, lo shanu ela yalda. Now, this is only talking about a younger woman who benefits from makeup. So therefore, for her, it's a simcha to put it on Chol HaMoed. Aval zkein aloy, but an older woman not. Because for them, they don't really get very much out of makeup. So the question was, the implicit question to the priest is, your wife is old. She's already old enough to have a daughter-in-law. So why is she putting on makeup? Amalei, so the priest tells him, you're wrong. Kim, I swear in the Eibishter's name, Afilu Imcha, even your mother would be allowed to put on makeup, even though, again, she has obviously a son who's old enough to be a senior Talmud of mine. Afilu Ima de Imach, even your grandmother would be allowed to put on makeup on Chol HaMoed. Afilu Emedes al Kivra, even if she's standing right by the entrance of her grave, in other words, she's, like you say in English, she's got one foot in the grave, she's like very, very old and about to pass away, still she's allowed to put on makeup on Chol HaMoed. The Amri Inshi, it's like the expression that people say, Bas Shitin Kibas Shis, a woman of 60 years old is like a woman of six years old, Lakal Tabla Rata, when she hears the bell and the instruments by a wedding playing, she comes running to join in the Simcha. So in other words, women of all ages like to participate in simchas, and by the same token, women of all ages like to beautify themselves with makeup. So therefore, even for an older woman, even for a woman like, for example, my wife or any other older woman, they're still allowed to put on makeup on Chol HaMoed. So therefore, Rav Chisda is telling him, well, my wife is doing is correct after all. Okay, we said in the Mishnah, Rav Yehuda Omer Lo Sasud. On the other hand, Rav Yehuda says that she shouldn't apply plaster, that Rav Yehuda agrees she's allowed to do the various other cosmetics, but he says not plaster, where you'd put some on your skin in order to remove unwanted hair or in order to soften the skin, because Rav Yehuda said it's because Rav Yehuda, so Tanya, we learn in a braise, Rav Yehuda Omer, Isha Lo Tosud, that a woman is not allowed to put on, is not allowed to put on this plaster on her skin, on Chol HaMoed, Nation Nivu Lullah, because it's a disgrace for her. Because, in other words, it sticks to the skin, it's uncomfortable, until it comes off, it doesn't look very good, so therefore, so she shouldn't do it. But, on the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda agrees that if the plaster treatment was the kind that she could take off on Chol HaMoed, so let's say, for example, it was quick drying plaster where it'll be ready, or for example, let's say she does it the first day of Chol HaMoed and there's enough time that by the end of Chol HaMoed she'll already be able to take it off, then Rabbi Yehuda agrees she'll take Falter HaMoed, she is allowed to put that on Chol HaMoed, because even though right now it's uncomfortable, but she's going to have simcha from it, that it helps her look better very soon, and that very soon is during Chol HaMoed, and therefore it's a malacha that you're allowed to do on Chol HaMoed. So the Gemara asks, "Me isle Rabbi Yehuda hai svara? Really, does Rabbi Yehuda hold of that svara that you're allowed to do something which, even though right now it has one kind of effect, later on it's going to have the opposite effect, and therefore you're allowed to do it even now because of the effect later?" Well, it's not. We learn in the first Mishnah of Masechta Avodah Zarah. Yeah, the Mishnah discusses over there that there's various kinds of business that you're not allowed to do with goyim within 3 days before one of their chagas. Because the problem is, the Gemara says that these various kinds of things, the goy is going to be very happy about what happened, and then on the day of his chaga, he's going to go and thank his avodah zarah for the good business deal he did or whatever. So therefore, for 3 days before it, you're not allowed to. Nowadays, many of those halachas don't apply for various reasons. There's the idea that the goyim nowadays are not so fanatical and attached to their religion that they're going to go and thank the Avodah Zarahs. B'chlal, there's the question whether Christianity, for example, is Avodah Zarah or not. Some of the Rishonim say that for Goyim, it's considered only Shittuf. You have also the fact is we live among the Goyim and it's really impossible to avoid doing business with them. Whatever the case, anyway, you have that din in the Mishnah, that there's certain kinds of things you're not allowed to do with them during the days before their Chagas. And one of them is, the Mishnah mentions, the Tanakhama says, that you're not allowed to, if you previously lent them money, you're not allowed to have them pay you back within 3 days before their chaga. So Rabbi Yehuda, I mean, if Roin Mehen, Rabbi Yehuda says you are allowed to have them pay you, because the goy is going to feel bad about it. I had to give that money away, so therefore it's not something he's going to be going and thanking his getchka. Omruloi, but the Chachamim answered him, no, Alpha Pisha Meitzer Achshav, it's true that right now he's feeling bad about it, that he had to give away that money. Sameach, hula achazman, but he's happy about it later on. Because later on, he thinks to himself, you know what, good, I finally got rid of that debt that was weighing on my mind, so now, after all, I'm happy, and he may go thank his getchka for that. Well, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with that. Rabbi Yehuda holds that the goy is never going to be happy about it. Whatever the case, the point is that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't accept that logic of Meitzer Achshav Sameach Hula Achazman. So why over here does he seem to be accepting it? That if you're able to take off the plaster during Chol HaMoed, then you're allowed to put it on during Chol HaMoed, even though to begin with it's uncomfortable. The answer is Omer. So the Omer of Nachman Yitzchak Hanach LeHilchas Moed Bikulum Meitzer Achshav Sameach LaAchazman Nidu. Set aside the halachas of Chol HaMoed. When you get down to it, anything you do during Chol HaMoed, any malacha that the Chachamim say you're allowed to do during Chol HaMoed is in that category. You're doing the malacha right now. You're not getting benefit from the malacha right now. When are you getting the benefit from it? When you have the finished product. So anything you do during Chol HaMoed is a kind of thing of some of Meitzer Achshav Sameach LaAchazman. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is going to say that putting on plaster is no different. Ravina says no, because Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with the whole premise. The Chachamim are saying that eventually the Goy is going to be happy. He's going to think to himself the next day, you know what? Yesterday I was upset because I had to take out all that money from my pocket and give it away. But on the other hand, you know, the fact is, looking at it the longer term, I'm happy because I finally got rid of that debt. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda says, no, there's no even Sameach, there's no even Sameach La'achas Man. He's going to always, the Goy is always going to feel bad that he had to pay back the debt, because he's going to think, you know what, I might have found some illegal way to not have to pay. So instead, now the Yid cornered me and made me pay, then now he's upset about it. And Rabbi Huda is going to say there's never a time when he feels simcha of it afterwards. So in other words, according to the second answer, Rabbi Yehuda would agree that where Sameach Ulachas Man, then it's fine. That's why he says it's allowed in the case of the plaster. But in the case of the Goy with the loan, Rabbi Yehuda says there's no even Sameach Ulachas Man, and therefore you have nothing to worry about him going and thanking his getchka. Whereas the Chachamim disagree, and they say that there is a Sameach Ulachas Man, and therefore they say that therefore they're being consistent. When Sameach La'achas Man, as far as Chol HaMoed, then you're allowed to put on the plaster. And when Sameach La'achas Man, and therefore there's the concern that he's going to go and thank his getchka, then you're not allowed to have him pay you back the loan. So continuing on this topic of beauty treatments, Amar Rav Yehuda, B'nois Yisrael shi'igyu l'pirkan v'le'igyu l'shanim, Jewish girls who have reached their pirkan but have not yet reached their years. So Rashi explains that it means they're already growing hair, Shtei Cyrus and hair in other places, but they're not yet 12 years old, and therefore they're embarrassed to have that hair, so they want to remove it. Tosfos in some other places gives a different explanation, that it means these are girls who are already kala medlach, but they're not beautiful yet. They want to help themselves become more beautiful. So anias toflas oisin besid. So poor girls would smear their skin with plaster, and the idea would be, according to Rashi, it's that way it removes the unwanted hair, and according to Tosfos, it softens their skin. Ashiras toflas oisin besolas. Richer girls would use fine flour and smear and make a paste of that and smear it on their skin. Bnois malachim b'shemen amur. King's daughters, princesses who are even richer, would use shemen hamur for that purpose. Shenema, as we find in Megillas Esther, the beauty treatment that they gave for all the candidates who were brought to Achashverosh, shisha chadashim b'shemen amur. They used 6 months. They treated them with shemen amur. So we see that shemen amur is a beauty treatment that's used in royal palaces. So Gemara says, "My shemen amur. What is shemen amur?" We learned this most recently in Megillah. Rav Huna Bachia amas saptas. So Rav Huna Bachia says it's what's called in our language saptas. Rashi in various places says I don't know what that is exactly. Tosfos says that Tosfos says in fact shemen amur is saptas. So apparently mur is a kind of spice like you have in the ingredients of the Torah, muruxia. So it's oil extracted from that. It means shemen amur is oil of olives that have not yet reached one third of their growth. Or Rashi in Menachos, where it brings this also, says what it means is, what is the definition of sakkas? Is oil from olives that have not yet grown one third of their growth. So that oil is particularly strong, and they use it for this purpose. So the Gemara says, Tanya, we learn in Braisa, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Anpekinun, in Mishnah and Menachos over there, it mentions you're not allowed to use Anpekinun for the oil for Menachos. So what is Anpekinun? Is exactly that. Shemen Zayis, Shalehevi Shlish, is oil from olives that have not yet grown one third of their growth. So why would people smear it out on their skin? Because it removes unwanted hair and it softens and clears up the skin. So the Gemara says in this connection about these kinds of beauty treatments, Rabivi Havalei Brata, Rabivi had a daughter, Tofla Aver, and he applied this plaster treatment or whatever kind of treatment to her one body part at a time. Later on, when it was time for her to get married, she was so beautiful that he was able to get 400 zuz as the nadin for her, which is a huge amount of money. Well, Habahu Kusi the Shiva will say, there was a guy, a Kusi, who lived in Rabivi's neighborhood. The Havale Brata, he also had a daughter. He figured he's going to do the same thing, but he was impatient. Tofla Bachad Zimna, he smeared her with the plaster all at once, unlike Rabivi, who did it one part at a time. Umesa, and the girl died. Omar, so the Goy was very angry. He says, Katla Bibi Librati, Bibi killed my daughter. In other words, he gave me the idea to use this kind of treatment, and now, as a result of it, has killed my daughter. But obviously the answer is that no, because you did it carelessly, you did it all at once instead of doing it piecemeal. So Amar Rav Nachman says, not even everybody needs that treatment. Rav Bibi, the Shossi Shichra, Rav Bibi used to drink beer, so therefore it had an effect on his children. But maybe his children drank it also. Boyan bin Se Tafla, therefore his daughters need this kind of treatment to remove unwanted hair because drinking beer tends to do that. It tends to make hair grow more on a person's body, and it tends to make the skin more coarse. So therefore, so his daughter would need this kind of treatment. Anan, Delisha, Sin, and Shichra, we who don't drink beer, Lloyd Boyan, Vincent Tafla, our daughters don't need this kind of treatment. Bechlau, we have less invasive ways of making them beautiful and softening their skin. Okay, but in any case, the point is that this kind of plastering, again, Rabbi Huda is saying you're not allowed to do it during Chol HaMoed unless you're still going to be able to remove it on Chol HaMoed. The Chachamim disagree and say you can do it regardless. Shkoyach, everyone.